Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 14, What I Use, iOS. I'm Daniel Messer. Another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, the show that examines the intersection between libraries and technology and is all about living the high-tech and low-budget lifestyle. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood Cyberpunk Librarian, welcoming you back and thanking you for tuning in, or at least allowing the shuffle function on your podcatcher of choice to start playing this. And if you're listening to this, you haven't turned it off yet, so thank you so much for tuning in. It's great to be back in front of a microphone on a very beautiful sunny day in Arizona. I'm recording this on Sunday, which happens to be Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to any of the dads out there that listen to the podcast or soon-to-be dads and things like that. Hot day. Looks like it's going to be a hot day, about 102 degrees. The thing about Arizona heat is you either love it or hate it. And I get so many complaints from people who have lived here almost all their lives, or at least for years and years, about how it gets so hot in the summer. And to me, that is a feature, not a bug. And I don't understand it, because if you don't like the weather, as George Carlin says, if you don't like the weather, move. And, you know, it's not like it doesn't get hot in Arizona during the summer. I mean, it was 105 degrees or something yesterday, and it was gorgeous. I love the heat. I love the dryness of the desert. It just suits me. So whatever it is in your neck of the woods, it's absolutely sunny and beautiful here in Arizona on this rather sedate Father's Day. I know that most dads would probably want something like breakfast in bed, maybe lounge around the house and do not much of anything. Me, I got up, had breakfast, got some coffee, and now I'm talking to you. Yes, recording a podcast early Sunday, Father's Day morning, because I am a big old nerd. But hey, on this episode, we are going to talk about the things I use, speaking of nerding. And we're going to concentrate on iOS. Now, if you haven't gotten this from previous episodes of the podcast, I am what the Nightwise.com podcast refers to as a cross-platform geek. I do not have any real allegiance to Microsoft or Apple or Linux or Android or iOS or anything else. I find that it's much more interesting and far more fun to just simply use all of them. Each operating system, each thing has its own, you know, positives and negatives. And right tool for the right job. You certainly wouldn't get a hammer to cut a board in half. And there are times that what is available on an iPad is absolutely what I need to do my job. Now, I do confess that I do carry a MacBook Air with me pretty much everywhere I go, and an iPad, but in that same bag, I also have an Android tablet and my phone, Samsung Galaxy Note 3, baby. I would probably buy an iPhone again if Apple made them the size of the Galaxy Note 3. I'm not holding my breath over that one. Anyway, so that's what we'll be doing on this episode, talking about what I use and how I use it. And rather than being just a list of links and stuff like that, I'll actually get into the why I use it and the whole philosophies behind it. So stick around. We're about to get into that right now. So, as we get into this list of stuff that I use, I'd like to point out just that. This is stuff I actually use. So this won't be a thing where I just give you a list of apps or something like that and say, hey, I think you'll like these, go download them and go nuts. No, this is actually stuff that I use on pretty much a daily basis, or at least whenever I pick up an iPad. Now, on that, my iOS device of choice is an iPad. I have an iPad 2 that was issued to me by my library, which is absolutely wonderful. It was nice that they did that. And it allows me to do my job more effectively, because part of my job, I'm the web guy, in case you don't know. And so part of my job is to make sure that things like the website and our services off the website work in iOS and look good in Safari for iOS. So anytime I make a significant change to the website, I always check it on the iPad, because a large percentage of our people that use the website that are hitting it using a mobile device are hitting it using iOS. And of that, most of them are using an iPad. So there's that. I mean, it's just part of my job. But another part of what I do is downloadable content. So things like ebooks and downloadable magazines and audio and stuff like that. So not only do I use the iPad to just check the website, I also get all the apps that are, you know, that our patrons and customers and people would be using to access our services and the content that we've paid for. So if you're a web person or you're in electronics and libraries or whatever, you really do need to have sort of one of everything. I recommend that you have an iOS device, preferably an iPad, some kind of Android device, preferably, you know, a tablet or a decent phone. So you can test these things out, because it's no good unless you know for sure that it works, and it's no good unless you can help people through things. I've had people sent to my desk, you know, through the phone, and they're having an issue with some app, maybe OverDrive or something like that, on their iPad. And just being able to say, hold on a sec, and then reach across my desk and grab an iPad, that helps, because now I can see what they see. So I just want to point that out, that this is stuff that I actually use. This is not just a list of things that I think you might like. Obviously, I hope you'll like them. That's why we're here. But this is a list of things that I use pretty much every day. Now, like I said, I'm using an iPad too, and I bought my own Apple Bluetooth keyboard a few days back. I had a Bluetooth keyboard, but it was sort of a plastic affair. It worked okay, but the keys were starting to kind of get a little bit iffy. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to get another Bluetooth, I may as well go get probably what is the best Bluetooth keyboard. And I've always heard people talk about, well, if you're going to have an iPad, you really should have an Apple iOS, you know, an Apple Bluetooth keyboard. Okay, I'll go check it out. I can always return it if I don't like it. Yep, fell in love with it within the first 5 minutes. It is easily the best Bluetooth keyboard I have ever used. So if you are using an iPad and you do use it for work or whatever, I really recommend you just go get the Apple Bluetooth keyboard. It's the best you can buy. It's not that expensive. It's not cheap. But once you use it for a few, you know, like an hour, because I also write with it, you figure out where that money went real quickly. So let's get started, and let's get started with e-reading. So like I said, part of my job is to make sure that things coming off of our downloadable content services are working, and to help troubleshoot them when they're not working. So for e-reading, like most libraries or many libraries out there at the very least, we have access to OverDrive. Now, love it or hate it, or whatever you think about OverDrive, our patrons and customers love OverDrive. I mean, that's where they can get their, you know, their best-selling books. That's where they can get all their popular ebooks. So, you know, philosophical library arguments aside, I'd like to point out that for all the fighting that librarians do, and it's a good fight, don't get me wrong, this is a important fight about DRM and OverDrive and how vendors treat libraries and things like that, shove all of that aside and remember that your patrons, your customers, the people using your library don't care. They don't even know about it. This is sort of like the movie Highlander, where there's been almost an eternal battle going on between immortal forces, and there can be only one, and no one knows about it. No one knows about it, and no one really cares about it. So that's kind of how the whole DRM in libraries is when it relates to your customers. That's not to say it's not important. Believe me, it is. However, I would think that sort of like 23 hours out of your 24-hour day, you have to realize that your patrons and your customers, they don't care. They don't even know. They just want something that gives them access to the books and the e-content that they want. And as long as it works, they're probably going to be happy. So, OverDrive. Of course I have the app for OverDrive. Keep it updated, keep it fresh, keep it going. And I actually do use it occasionally. I don't do a lot of reading through OverDrive. But sometimes, you know, I see a book that I want and it's right there on OverDrive. Well, I'll just go ahead and get that book. So, yeah, have to have OverDrive. For troubleshooting, for just general making sure things work, you got to use it. Now, OverDrive also offers Kindle books. Now, that's sort of my preferred method of reading. I do like the Kindle. God help me, I do like Amazon.com. Once again, you know, fighting aside the whole Hachette versus Amazon versus Monopoly debate, yes, that's an important fight to have. Yes, that is something we should be talking about as librarians and as consumers. And then you need to realize that probably 98% of the people out there don't know, and they don't care. And for the most part, once again, 23 hours out of my 24-hour day, I don't much care either. I mean, this is a fight that I will have. This is discussions I will write about, things like that. But in the end, I pick up my iPad, I fire up the Kindle app, and I read. Now, the Kindle app is also there, of course, to make sure that Kindle content coming from OverDrive is working like it should. So, you know, as soon as I hear from someone, hey, I tried to download this Kindle book and it didn't work. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Well, what system were you using? Well, I was using an iPad and I was sending it to my Kindle app. Okay, well, let me go see what's up. Let me go see if that's a thing that's happening, and if not, then we'll go from there. So not only is Kindle sort of my preferred e-reading platform of choice, it's something there that I use to troubleshoot and make sure that things are working. Now then, we also offer Zinio, and Zinio probably saves me, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 or $30 a month, because before Zinio, I was a total magazine flonk. I still like magazines. And I know dead medium, it's something that's going away, magazines are closing up shop every month, blah, 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 whatever. I love magazines, and I would still read magazines. And when we got our Zinio service, they came to me and said, Dan, we need you to test the Zinio service. I was like, Zinio, is that the downloadable magazines? Yes, they have a library thing. Oh, well, let me take a look at the list. And then I went down the list and found about half the magazines that I was reading at the time. So, yeah, Zinio. Love Zinio because I love me some magazines. But once again, it's part of my job to make sure that this stuff is working. So, yeah, not only am I, you know, a worker that's using Zinio, I am a library patron that's using Zinio because I love that app. Little slow sometimes, but, you know, given the fact that you're getting sort of like high quality images and, you know, beautiful text and stuff like that, I mean, you are getting the magazine. I can't complain. I can't complain too loudly, especially since my taxes, you know, that invisible money that I just send to the state every year, I don't know. I get magazines, and I think that that's a worthwhile expenditure. So I'm willing to wait a few minutes for the magazine to download and all of that. Now, finally, this one is more for me, but something that I use on a fairly regular basis because it is probably one of the easiest ways to get e-content on your iPad without hooking it to a television, or a television. Jeez, more coffee, please. Without hooking it to your computer or transferring it through iTunes or all that stuff. I really don't remember the last time I fired up iTunes on my Mac. I just don't use it. I've got other methods of listening to music, some of which we'll get into here in a few minutes. But if you're going to be putting things like PDFs, maybe some ebooks, maybe anything like that on your iPad that don't come from one of your library services, maybe it's something you just have, Goodreader. Now, Goodreader isn't free. I don't know the price right now. I believe they were having a sale, but that sale was based on whether or not you had the old version of Goodreader, and I did. So check out Goodreader. Of course, there will be links to all of this stuff in the podcast notes, which you can pick up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. So Goodreader is a wonderful thing that allows you to fairly easily put stuff on your iPad to read. And you can hook it to whole bunches of services. You can hook it to Dropbox. You can hook it to Google Drive. You can hook it to an FTP server, whatever works for you. And then if you want to read that PDF or you want to read that ebook or whatever, you can just say, go to your computer and drag it into Google Drive and then walk over to your iPad and pick it up and open it up. There it is. That's what Goodreader does. And it does it wonderfully. So if you're into things like that, and I am because I'll read stuff from anywhere, yeah, Goodreader's a good app to have. So, moving on, I want to talk about Safari. Now, Safari is the web browser for iOS, in case you weren't aware. And I know this is going to sound strange, but maybe not, because I'm a web guy. But I prefer Safari over certain apps. So there are apps like there's a Google app that will search Google for you. There is a Bing app and a DuckDuckGo app. And there are all kinds of apps that are basically sort of there to replace a website. But the problem is I kind of like the website better. Within Safari, you have sort of more interconnectedness in a device that is very non-interconnected. Say what you want about iOS, let's be honest, it's hard to share information between apps. But Safari does a pretty good job. And the thing is when it comes to just a search engine app like the Google app or Bing app, I just use Safari. I just bring that up and type www.google.com or whatever and just use the website. It just seems to work as well, if not better. I have a Wikipedia app. I have a librarian folder on my iPad that I sometimes dive into when I need sort of a specialized tool. I have a Wikipedia app, and I would say at least half the time, maybe more, I forget that I have it. I just bring up Safari and go to Wikipedia that way. So your mileage may vary, but what I do recommend is for any app that you come across that basically replaces a website, go ahead and give it a shot, but make sure you try the website too and see which one works better for you. Just because, you know, the ubiquitous saying of there's an app for that, yeah, that doesn't mean the app is the best solution. So this is going to sound weird, but yeah, I totally recommend the web browser that comes with iOS because it seems to do a whole lot of what I need it to do. And of course, I checked the website on it and various other websites too. So, news. I am a bit of a content junkie. I know. Web content manager. I don't know how that would be that I might be a content junkie. So there are a couple apps that I use, among others, but these are the two that I fire up all the time. I was downstairs about 30 minutes before recording this podcast. I was having breakfast, I was drinking coffee, and I was looking at Flipboard. Now, Flipboard is, once again, like a magazine. And what did I say about magazines? That I absolutely love magazines. So Flipboard is like a digital magazine that you create from sources on the internet. Now, for some people, they're just going to be sitting in their car at their desk or whatever, listening to this podcast going, "Ah, I know what Flipboard is. It's been around forever." Yeah, well, dude, some people don't know what Flipboard is because I run into those people every now and then. And yeah, it's one of those things that if you don't know what it is, then I'm about to change your life, because Flipboard is a magazine that you build from online sources. They have a bunch of them. So if you're into tech and science, they've got tech and science sources. They've got sports, lifestyle, travel, all kinds of stuff, the arts, all of it. And you can add your own RSS feeds to it if you feel so inclined and roll things that way. But the nifty thing about it is you don't have to stick to a certain subject. My Flipboard has stuff in there, of course, about tech and science, but also about art and music and writing and things like that, stuff that is really of interest to me. And Flipboard is one of those, it's like a magazine that you just sort of sit down and flip through, hence the name, and just kind of look at the article, see if there's anything that interests you. And if there is, you just read the article, right? You do that at the doctor's office or whatever. You just sit down, you look at the stack of magazines that have been there since the bicentennial, and you find one and you just flip through it until you find something worthwhile to read. Flipboard's like that, except the articles are updated all the time because as their sources update, say The Verge publishes a new story, boom, goes to Flipboard. So every time you pick up Flipboard and just start flipping through articles, you're going to find something new. And that's awesome. I've got so many sources in Flipboard, I could do an entire show on that. But I just open it up and start flipping until I see something I want to read. It's great. Now then, I did an entire show on Reddit. And I gave you some of my favorite subreddits. That was by no means all of the subreddits I subscribe to. I subscribe to something like 200 subreddits. And there are times that I just want to read them, all of them, or some of them. But at the very least, I just want to look at Reddit and find cool stuff. And for the iOS, you know, world and the iPad, I use Alien Blue. Now, Alien Blue is just sort of a standard Reddit client, but I like the way it's laid out. I like the way you can upvote things and downvote things and save things to the iPad or mark them to save for later. So what I will usually do is if I find something that I want to pick up later, maybe I find a beautiful image of some fantasy scene with elves and forests and all of that sort of Lord of the Rings, you know, beautiful picture, because I'm an image junkie too. I'll find that on Reddit, and then I can just hit the little star, and now it's saved on Reddit. So when I go back, I can, you know, just look at it, and I can pick it up on my computer, I can save that image, I can make it my desktop wallpaper, whatever. There are other clients for iOS that are Reddit clients. I've just found Alien Blue to be the best one. So check that one out. Alien Blue, I don't believe, is free. I will sort of point out when things aren't free, but we're talking like $5. It's not expensive. These are iOS apps. They're fairly inexpensive, and I'm not going to recommend some $20, $30 app for you. So if you're into Reddit and you're into iOS, you got to try Alien Blue. I have a colleague who works at the state library who is a huge Reddit fan and an iOS user, and he didn't know about it. And he had mentioned to me, literally at a table at a conference, God, I wish there was an easier way to do this. And I said, Alien Blue. And he looked it up, and he kind of looked at the screenshots, and then he downloaded it. And yeah, I don't think that smile left his face for the rest of the day, because I think he's a bigger Reddit junkie than I am. So yeah, if you're into Reddit, check out Alien Blue. So, not everything that I do for work, at work, or whatever is totally content related, and sometimes I just need some music, especially if I'm writing code, or I'm, you know, making graphics for the website, or I have to design something, or whatever. I need some music. I'm a musician, and I like to listen to music. I would listen to music and podcasts all the time if I were able to. So I've got three selections here that I use very frequently to listen to music on the iPad. And the first one is Spotify. I have a Spotify premium subscription, which I believe is $10 a month. And I love Spotify. I mean, the new album from so-and-so comes out, I can usually pick it up on Spotify. An old album from someone that I haven't listened to in years, I normally can find them on Spotify. And I have really weird variety of tastes in music. So it is not unusual for me to listen to the Kingston Trio and then switch to ambient techno. And then let's listen to some, I don't know, let's listen to some German metal and all of that. And as an example of what I was able to find on Spotify recently that I was just kind of shocked over, I have a thing for Japanese pop music, and I recently discovered a group called World Order. And I was like, these guys are cool. I want to listen to everything World Order. I wonder if it's on Spotify. And I giggled to myself thinking, Japanese pop? Probably not. Guess what? World Order. Spotify. Hooked me up. Awesome. So if you're willing to pay $10 a month, you can get all the mobile clients and all that functionality and whatever. They do have a free account. And, you know, I don't remember how it works anymore, because it used to be that you had to have the premium account to use the mobile app. And I don't believe they do that anymore. So look into that. I confess I didn't look that up because I'm just so used to opening Spotify and firing up some tunes. So, yes, Spotify. Excellent stuff. Now then, beyond Spotify, and I know this probably won't surprise anybody, I love radio. I love sort of the spontaneity and the fact that you really don't have control over radio. You just sort of listen to whatever comes on, and, you know, maybe it's good, maybe it's bad, but if it's bad, you wait 4 or 5 minutes and another song comes on, right? However, I don't like commercials, and unfortunately most terrestrial radio these days is like 20 minutes of music followed by 10 minutes of commercials. There have been times that I've left my driveway listening to the radio in the car, and I drive up to, say, the local Target or an In-N-Out to get some lunch or something like that, and I never hear a song. Never hear a song. It's all commercials. So I'm a huge fan of internet radio, which tends to have limited commercials, and the commercials are there to really support that thing. They're there to support that radio, you know, that internet radio station. They're not there to support a massive sort of Clear Channel-esque national thing. So for my internet radio needs, I do have to recommend Soma FM. That's S-O-M-A FM. Now, Soma FM has an app for the iPad that is excellent, but you can also listen on the web. So if you don't want to get the app right away, just go try Soma FM. If you're into sort of down-tempo, which if you've ever listened to this podcast, you know that I am, or even upbeat stuff, they've got everything. Soma FM has stuff from folk to sort of classic electronica to, oh man, there's a channel on Soma called Lush. And Lush is basically female vocalists. And yeah, I have a thing for female vocalists. I do love the female voice. There's nothing wrong with male singers. I do have plenty of male singers that I'm a fan of. But I have far more female singers that I am a fan of. I just think the female voice sounds amazing most of the time. So yeah, Soma FM has a channel called Lush, and that's all it is. So they've got channel after channel, and they've got some things that they put up as special things that are going on every so often. During Burning Man, they have a channel for that, just music of, about, and sort of, you know, revolving around Burning Man. So new things come and go. It's great. So the app, I believe, is like $4 or something like that. Check that out. That one's not a free app, but the money goes to support Soma FM, and I have no problem supporting Soma FM. And the third one is a little app called Radio Box, and that's all one word, Radio Box. Radio Box is there to basically capture and play streams. So I listen to a lot of internet radio, but most of them are just streaming somewhere off the web. It's just a URL. You punch that URL into some kind of streaming app, and you're listening to the station. So I listen to things like No Life Radio, which is video game music, and I listen to a few Japanese pop stations. And then there's Jupiter Broadcasting, which has a stream going that has all kinds of interesting content on it. Things like that. It's just a stream. And Radio Box handles those streams very well. So I punch that in, just set up your favorites, whatever you need to do. If you listen to streaming internet radio, Radio Box is sort of a go-to for me on iOS. Easy to use. You can even set sort of a background for it. So if you want a specific picture as your background, I know that's kind of cheesy, but it's kind of nice because you can look over at your iPad or whatever and see what the song is, and you've got a background that you chose. It looks nice. Okay. Social. If you've read an article on my personal blog, which I will link in the comments and stuff like that, I kind of gave up on Facebook. I haven't left it. I didn't delete my account and, you know, walked away in slow motion as things exploded behind me and turned into a smoldering ruin. But I'm just not hanging out on Facebook that much. I've often compared Facebook to Denny's in high school. So when I was in high school, and today, and ever since, I hate Denny's. If you've never been to a Denny's, it's like America's Diner. It's basically American food, hamburgers, steak and eggs, fries, things like that. I don't like them. The food's not all that great. The service is usually worse. I just don't like Denny's, but that's where all my friends were. So if I wanted to hang out with my friends, I had to go to Denny's. And that's how I always sort of looked at Facebook. All my friends are on Facebook. If I want to hang out with my friends, I have to go to Facebook. Well, damn it, I'm 37 years old. I don't need to go to Denny's anymore. And Facebook just sort of became something that I didn't want anymore. So I haven't given up, haven't walked away from it. I just have gotten to the point where I'll look at it maybe once a week. Someone will tell me, hey, there's pictures of your grandniece on Facebook, or, you know, so-and-so posted a really cool picture of something, or so-and-so got a new job. Okay, I'll go look at that. I'm going there for a reason now. I'm not just going there to go there. So, yeah, I don't use Facebook much anymore. There is a Facebook app for iOS. It's okay. I just don't care anymore. However, I do love me some Google Plus. And the Google Plus app for iOS is gorgeous. I love how it works. I love the visual effects inherent in it and how they display the content that is on Google Plus. Now, everybody always says, well, Google Plus is a ghost town. No one's there. Funny? You ought to see my feed. It's massive. It's varied. There's all kinds of cool stuff on Google Plus. Give it a shot. I mean, I remember back in the day when Facebook was horrible. because there was nothing there. It was just getting started. It's a new social network. It takes a while. But the great thing about Google Plus is it just seems to have far better content. I hang out there far more often than I ever did on Facebook, and I just like it more. So, yeah, if you're gonna pick a social network that you want to follow me on, Google Plus. I'm google.com/plusDanielMesser. You can find me that way. So yeah, the Google Plus app for iOS, love it. Beautiful, works well. I like how it's set up. I think it's a great app. And of course, Twitter. I was on Twitter, oh man, years ago. I would say I was an early adopter. I wasn't one of the first, 5,000 people or anything. But as soon as I found out about Twitter, I immediately thought, hey, this is kind of cool and I can totally see why this would be useful. So yeah, Twitter for iOS. It's not bad, but it's lacking in a few places. The problem is, though, that Twitter basically killed all of the clients that were making their own thing for Twitter. So you had some great Twitter apps for iOS, and now they're pretty much gone because Twitter basically said, well, you can only have this many users. Well, we already have that many users. Well, I guess you're screwed. And that's how Twitter handled it. So they've got the Twitter client for iOS. It's okay, it does the job, but in the end, I usually use TweetDeck on a computer. Yes, TweetDeck is also part of Twitter, but in my opinion, it's the Twitter client that actually does what Twitter clients should do. So, yeah, Twitter for iOS, if you're just looking to tweet, maybe read some tweets from your friends, whatever, it's totally good for that. If you're looking for something a little more in-depth, you're just going to have to go elsewhere. So Twitter and Google+, those are my social networking things of choice. But, it's not always just social networking. It's not always listening to stuff. Sometimes I like to watch things, too. Now, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I kind of joke about the fact that I watch more YouTube than I do television, but that's not really a joke. That is just a base fact. The sky is blue. That is a base fact. I watch more YouTube than I do television. Fact. So the YouTube app for iOS has improved greatly over the last year or two. A while back, Apple killed its own YouTube app on iOS because they're trying to get away from all things Google, at least all things Google that are built right into the system. So Google responded with a YouTube app that was far better than anything iOS had going for it before. And they've steadily improved upon it and improved upon it and improved upon it. And yeah, I watch a lot of YouTube on the iPad. I have different shows that I watch, like Kurt J. Mack, who does Let's Play videos. There's Vsauce. There's, the Vlog Brothers, John Green and his brother. You might know John Green as the author of The Fault in Our Stars, which is currently in theaters, and which I'm totally not going to watch because I have enough sadness and drama in the real world. I don't need it in my imaginary world, too. I'm sure it's a great book. I'm sure it's an excellent movie. Seems to be getting great reviews. But the thing that I know John Green best for is his witty and insightful things that he says on his YouTube channel, Vlog Brothers, he and his brother Hank. Good stuff. If you're into The Fault in Our Stars, you got to check out the Vlog Brothers on YouTube. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Good stuff. And then of course, Netflix. I don't know many people who don't have a Netflix subscription. It just seems to be a thing that people do now, and that's fine. I dumped cable probably a year and a half ago and basically just said, look, I've got Netflix, I've got YouTube, I have the Amazon Prime things and all of that. That should do it. And you know what? It's totally done it. So I don't watch a lot of Amazon Prime as much as I thought I would, but hey, it's there. But Netflix, yeah, constantly. I mean, Netflix has Doctor Who. It's got some great documentaries. It's got cartoons. It's got pretty much anything I want. Sort of like Flipboard. I know that I can tune into Netflix and find something to watch. It doesn't really matter what mood I'm in. Do I want sort of artistic documentary? Yep, got that. Do I want just dumbass cartoon that is funny and stupid and oh so hilarious but dumb? Yeah, they got that too. So Netflix, YouTube, that's what I watch. And finally, a couple things that don't really fit in those two categories, plain text. Now, this is going to sound a little weird, but I do almost all of my writing on an iPad because the iPad goes with me pretty much anywhere I go. I'll get into that in a second as to why it goes with me most anywhere I go. But plain text is kind of exactly that. This is not a free app. And I'll put links in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. But plain text is sort of exactly that. It is a plain text word processor. And calling it a word processor is a bit of a stretch because all it does is plain text. Now, in case you're not getting this, plain text, that's all it does. And that's exactly how I write the first draft of everything that I write. In case you didn't know, I do have a couple books on the Amazon Kindle store. I'm working on my third book. I've got something like 6 or 7 chapters done. Six? No, I think 7. I think I'm done with 7. I'd have to go look. And the first draft of all of those is written in plain text, because when I write, I like to sit down and just pound out the text. I have my notes, I have things in my head, I have stuff that I want to say, and I don't need to bold or italicize or underline or call attention to or put a header here or put something else there. I just need to write. I need to write. I need to get this out. I can edit later. And that's exactly what plain text does for me. And the great thing about plain text is it will sync to Dropbox and iCloud. So you can set up a folder in Dropbox, and as you write, pretty much every time you stop typing for a second or two, it uploads the latest edition to Dropbox. So that's great. I will, pop into my MacBook Air later on. I will pull up that text file. I will usually put it into LibreOffice and do all the changes that I need to do to it. I also use it for blog posting. As much as I love WordPress, the sort of visual blog editor is kind of, it's there, it works, it's great, but I'd rather just write in something that's totally full screen, doesn't have all the buttons and clicky things. And, if I'm going to write most of my stuff in plain text anyway, I will write blog posts in plain text too. And then, copy and paste it right into the WordPress editor, make all the changes that I need to make, add images, links, what have you, and click publish. So, yeah, plain text. If you're into writing at all, yeah, I would recommend that, especially if you're like me, where your first draft is nothing but text. There's no formatting. There are breaks between paragraphs, and that is your formatting. Now, I've said this before, but I live in Evernote. Evernote is sort of like it's basically a commonplace book for me. Anything that I learn, anything that I want to remember, every project that I have goes into Evernote. And I know I'm taking a bit of a risk there because I am trusting a third-party service to my data, but I have to admit Evernote's never failed me. And even say the website or say Evernote goes down for a while, chances are I still have access to my notes because I have them locally on all of my computers. It won't be able to sync the changes until Evernote comes back. But when it does, there's my changes. So I feel that mitigates the issue somewhat. So I have, I don't even want to try and count the number of notes that I have in Evernote. So yeah, Evernote. I used to actually write in Evernote, but I found that I like plain text better. So Evernote is there for all of your note-taking needs. I mean, any meetings I go to, any project that I'm working on, whatever. I just shove it into Evernote, and it's always there for me no matter where I pick it up. Because I use the client on pretty much every computer that can handle the client. On Linux, they have a couple sort of third-party Evernote clients that are, they're okay, but I just use the website. And the website for Evernote is not bad. So, yeah. I don't mind that a bit. And finally, this gets into the point where this is why I carry my iPad with me pretty much wherever I go. And it wasn't sort of an intended thing. It was just sort of a thing that I thought up and thought might work. And that's the fact that the iPad handles virtual private networks, VPNs. A lot of people I found don't use them for that and don't even know that functionality exists, even though it's kind of right there in the settings part of your iPad, but, handles VPNs. Well, that doesn't sound like a big deal until you realize that if the website goes down or something like that and I'm not at work, I need to get into my job. And the great thing about handling a VPN is I can get into the library's virtual private network from my iPad. I got it set up in there. And I can fire that up. All I need is a wireless access point, which is another reason why I have the keyboard and recommend that you buy an external Bluetooth keyboard for your iPad. Because once I'm into the VPN, I can use this final app to get to my desktop at work. And since I work in a Windows environment, I have to recommend Microsoft Remote Desktop for iOS. Now, this is a free app, and it blows my mind that it's free because it is so incredibly useful. A while back, there was an issue at work, and I was out and about, and I hadn't set up the VPN on my iPad yet. So I get a phone call. It wasn't like a show-stopping issue. It's just like, this thing is broken. Oh, my God. It's like, well, no, it's fine. I'll get it here in a sec, but I'm out at the store, and I don't have a computer on me. Well, that is a bit of a bummer, because even though it wasn't a showstopper, it's still something broken on the website, and I don't like that. I don't like things being broken on the library website. That kind of runs counter to the point, doesn't it? So I had to come home, and I had to bring up my computer and connect to the VPN through that. And then I thought, well, the iPad handles VPN. How will it do? Will it do okay? Can I use it? Will it be useful? Yes, 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 and yes, it does just fine. And since the first thing I really have to do after connecting to the VPN is get into my desktop computer at work, well, Microsoft Remote Desktop, I bring that up. I've got all my credentials that I need for it in there, and I'm in. And I've got a keyboard in front of me, and I just touch the screen to do the mouse. It's brilliant. So now, if something goes down at work and I get that phone call while I'm out and about doing something with the family, I don't need to go home. I need to find some Wi-Fi, and there's a coffee shop usually within two or three blocks. Sometimes there's a coffee shop right near where I'm standing, and Wi-Fi is becoming more and more common, especially where I live. I do a lot of shopping at Target up the street, and they've got Wi-Fi. They've got store-wide Wi-Fi for customers. So if I'm there, great. It doesn't matter. So if I'm out and about now, I can get into my work. I can fix things. I can tweak things or whatever I need to do. All I need is my iPad and Microsoft Remote Desktop. Now, you don't need the Bluetooth keyboard for that, but boy, it's a lifesaver. I mean, you can do everything with the on-screen keyboard, but yeah, just get a keyboard. An external keyboard will save you time and irritation. So that is sort of a quick rundown of the stuff that I actually use daily basis, if not a daily basis, then pretty much every time I pick up the iPad, I'm going to use one of these apps that I just listed. Like I said, before I came up to record this podcast, what was I doing? I was flipping through Flipboard and eating breakfast, and that's one of the things on the list. What will I do later today? Oh, I'm totally going to watch some YouTube, because there's a couple channels that I follow that I know are probably going to have updates that I haven't seen yet. So, good stuff. If you're into the iOS, try these apps. I will have links to all of them in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And yeah, if this is the kind of thing that you prefer over Android, this is probably a good way to start if you're doing the library tech thing. That about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Library, and I hope you picked up some ideas for some apps and tips that you can use for the technical side of your library life, or just the technical side of your life if you don't happen to be a librarian. I've seen more and more librarians wandering the floor out there with an iPad or something like that under their arm, and, you know, hey, that makes lots of sense. You can basically carry the entire internet with you in your hand and better help your customers and your patrons and the people that actually come in and use your library. So that's the thing. And if you happen to be one of those people, then hey, maybe these apps might give you a little bit of help and maybe make your life a little bit easier, especially the music apps. I use those far more frequently than I probably should admit to, because hey, sometimes you just need music to get things done. Of course, we'll have links to all of this stuff at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. That's where you can pick up the show notes and see the latest episodes and the previous episodes of Cyberpunk Librarian. You can also subscribe to us in your podcatcher of choice. We're available on iTunes and through standard RSS feeds and all of that. The music you're currently listening to is Bacterial Love by Roll Music. I picked that up at the Free Music Archive. FreeMusicArchive.org has all kinds of tracks and tunes that you could use for a project, a video, a podcast, something like that. Great stuff there from all genres and all kinds. So if you need a little something that's classical, they've got classical. If you need down-tempo, they got it. Need something upbeat and techno-ish? They've got that too. Do you need something like a 16-bit chiptune like you're currently digging on? Well, yeah, they apparently have those as well. Great stuff there at the Free Music Archive. Just hit up freemusicarchive.org and then punch play on something. I guarantee you, you're going to find something that you'll like. The opening track, as always, is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita, and I'll have links to all of this in the show notes as well if you want to go check them out. If you want to get in touch with me, you can through various means and methods. I am cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. If you want to try the standard sort of email way, the classic way of getting in touch with someone on the internet. But I'm also on Google+. You can hit me up at google.com/plusDanielMesser. Or find me on Twitter. I am @Bibrarian. That's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It's like librarian, but with a B. So if you've got an idea for a future show, or you have an iOS app that you think is excellent and wasn't included in the list, by all means, get in touch with me. Drop a note in the comments at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. We'll add it in, because, hey, I love hearing from you, and I love ideas from the fans and the listeners. And with that, I'm going to wrap this show up. I thank you for tuning in. I'll catch you in 2 weeks for another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. And just remind you, you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.